I want to say hi to everybody at all of our campuses. I'm talking to you today from our campus here in Saratoga. And I was thinking, I wish everybody could be standing right here in this room with me. And then I thought, in a way, because of the beauty of the oneness of the church, we all are. As a lot of you may know, last month we did a soft launch. This weekend is the hard launch. And that means that we're ready to let everybody, Saratoga and beyond, know that we're here. God, we just love that. So Saratoga, way to go. And every campus, because we're all a part of serving and giving and volunteering to make that possible. Everybody everywhere that's building Jesus' church, way to go. This is the amazing thing about the church and why we love it so much. The church does not exist for the sake of the people who are inside. It exists for the sake of the people who are not inside yet. Because God's desire, which was from the very beginning and that he has not given up yet, is that the human race should flourish, that it should know shalom, that his kingdom would come on earth as it is in heaven. And that's why we exist as a church. It's not for us. You know, one of the fascinating things about Jesus is he was closer to God than anybody who ever lived. He said, I and the Father are one. And yet people who were the farthest from God flocked to him the most. In other words, people who agreed with Jesus the least wanted to be around Jesus the most. People who were farthest from his lifestyle wanted to be closest to his life. People who were the ungodliest person wanted to be around the godliest person that ever lived. So strange. And then when his church came along, when it got born, exactly the same thing happened. And the writer of the book of Acts in the New Testament says of this new little church in Jerusalem that they enjoyed the favor of all the people, and the Lord added daily to their number those who were being saved. In other words, people around that church said, man, I don't believe what they believe. I think they believe some weird stuff, but I'm sure glad they're here. And over time, one by one, mom or a dad or a child or somebody who was real old or somebody who was just starting out in life, people would discover it really is true. Jesus is real. I can know him. He wants to be my friend. He wants to change my life. And the new church just lived for that. They just gave everything for that to happen. So what we're talking about in this series about how God wants his world to flourish, and what we're talking about in this weekend as we launch this series is real simple and real core to why we exist. And it's just this: people matter to God. Which people matter to God? All people matter to God. How much do they matter to God? More than you can possibly imagine. Worth the life of his beloved son. And therefore, and therefore, and therefore, people matter to us. Which people matter to us? All people matter to us. How much do they matter to us? More than you can possibly imagine. And there's a reason that Jesus had to work so hard to teach folks this, and especially people that consider themselves people of faith, part of the spiritual community. There's a problem, there's a dynamic in human life that goes way deep. In fact, one of the foundational aspects of life that the whole discipline of sociology got built on is that human beings join together in groups by nature. We are tribal creatures. Now, that's not bad. God made us that way. But then when sin came along, when the fall happened, we kind of used those groups to divide the human race up. And there's a basic way that we divide people up, and it's us and them. We all tend to think, this is just part of our sinful nature, about us and them. We all tend to think that people in our group, us, show lots of interesting variety, but that they are all alike. What's more, we tend to get our sense of identity and our self-esteem from our in-group. So we all tend to favor us over them. This is a statement from one of the founders of sociology. That's how deep this runs. Each group nourishes its own pride and vanity, boasts itself superior, exists in its own divinities, and looks with contempt on outsiders. Now, that's not a religious statement. That is from a social scientist. This goes so deep. All kinds of studies have been done around this us versus them in-group thing. In one of those studies, boys that were put in one of two groups based on something as random as a coin flip, complete random assignment, very quickly decided that boys in their group had better personalities and were smarter than boys in the other group. And some of you are here and you're not boys at all. You are women and you're thinking, well, that's typical of boys. Girls would not do such a thing. Actually, girls are even worse. And I say that not on the basis of any study, just because I'm a boy. So we all carry around these categories about tribes, us and them. Could be around politics. There's my side and your side, the right side and the wrong side. Could be around age. People in my tribe, we all like the same music. We all have the same cultural memories. And they're different. They don't get it. They're not like us. People of a certain age are likely to have certain feelings about technology. It's not just that I don't know how to Snapchat. If I don't know how to Snapchat, it creates a kind of us-them with younger people who do. And instead of a bridge, it's a little fence. My phone keeps getting smarter, and I keep feeling dumber. So we all do us versus them around politics, around race. How much pain and hatred and warfare has that caused? Still does. Around culture, around generation, around gender, around sexuality, around wealth, around education. And guys, here's the thing. People, even churches, do it with religion, with spirituality. That leads to a real important question. This is fundamental, guys, for our church, for Menlo Church. When it comes to God, who is the in-group? When it comes to God, who's us and who's them? Which people does God identify with? What kind of music does God like? What kind of language does God speak? See, God made us in our image, but we all tend to remake God in our image and think, well, what I like, God likes. No. People matter to God. Which people? All people. How much? More than you can possibly imagine. This is the message that Jesus is going to teach if it kills him. And it kills him. And we read about it over and over and over if you studied his life much. And today we're going to dive into one such story that gets real deeply at this, at why it is that the community that Jesus began was fundamentally marked by this dynamic. Everybody's welcome. Everybody's welcome. That's not just a slogan. One day, as Jesus was walking along, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at the tax collector's booth. Now, in that day, a rabbi and a tax collector are about as us versus them as you can get. Sounds like the beginning of a joke back then, a rabbi and a tax collector walk into a bar. Tax collector in that day was quite different than IRS agents in our day who are really pretty popular. In that day, in Israel, tax collectors were amoral social climbers. They got their position by offering a bid to the Romans, the Roman government, for how much money they'd collect in taxes from a given region. And then, very typically, they would cheat and oppress their own people in order to enrich Caesar and Rome and enrich themselves. Israelites hated them. They were not allowed to testify in courts. They were listed with beasts and unclean things as objects that would make you unclean. A person devoted to God would not address them, eat with them, touch them, or even look at them. Now, if you're a Bible person, you may have noticed that often in the New Testament, there's a little phrase. There's two groups that will be listed together. It'll talk about sinners and tax collectors. Jesus was with sinners and tax collectors. Why do tax collectors get their own category? If they were sinners, why not just sinners? Why sinners and tax collectors? I'll tell you why. It's because tax collectors were so despised that even the sinners would be offended if they got put in the tax collector group. It's like, and we all do this, you know, we all got a hierarchy. I might be an adulterer, or a murderer, or a lech, or a thief, but at least I'm not one of them. At least there's somebody lower on the moral totem pole than me. And that's them, man. You're a tax collector. There's nobody below you. That's as low as it gets. So Jesus is walking this day, and he has some disciples by now, like Peter, James, and John. They used to be fishermen. Fishermen are not real high on the spiritual totem pole, but at least they're not tax collectors. And then Jesus sees a tax collector, and he stops. And his followers, his disciples, wait for Jesus to say what any rabbi would say. Hey, guys, this is the kind of corruption to which a life can sink apart from God. Stay away from this man. See why you need God's power. And instead of doing that, imagine how stunned they are when their rabbi actually walks up to Matthew and looks him in the eye. And I don't know, maybe puts a hand on his shoulder and says the two words that will change this tax collector's life forever. Follow me. I want to be in a relationship with you. I care about you. I care about your life. I know all about your past. That's okay. I want you to be part of my team. You're my kind of guy. You and I, man, we could really shake things up around here. We could get some stuff done around here. And everybody watching is stunned. This is unheard of. If you don't get the scandal of this, you don't get the story. And of course, Matthew is speechless. He's not getting offers from rabbis to be disciple on a regular basis. It would be like going into a penitentiary and saying to a prisoner, would you like to be governor? I come from Illinois, and in Illinois, you go from being governor to prison, but not the other way around. This is just scandalous, unprecedented, socially upheaving, confusing, head-scratching, inexplicable grace. And by the way, that's the only way that any human being ever gets connected to God, ever gets okay with God. Now, if that little crowd watching is amazed by what Jesus does, they're even more stunned by what happens next. Everybody watching waits for Matthew's reply. And they're all thinking, man, this is going to be rich. Nobody who decided, Matthew decided to go into the Roman-loving, Israel-cheating, tax-collecting, make-myself-rich business. Nobody who goes into that business is going to go into the rabbi-following business. He'll probably laugh in Jesus' face or maybe audit him. And instead, we're just told this. And Matthew got up and followed him. Left the tax collector booth, left everything in his past, his self-image, his identity, his pride. Doesn't even tell us if Matthew said anything. He just gets up and walks away from his job. Like, oh yeah, this is what I really wanted all along. Of course this is it. See, it turns out, guys, you're going to want to remember this. It turns out Matthew, the person that they all thought was the most unlikely God candidate in the world, Matthew was just one ask away from the kingdom of God. Matthew was just one ask away from life with Jesus. But this story doesn't end there. It gets way weirder. There's nothing like the church. Matthew has this idea. He gets connected to Jesus, and he just loves Jesus. Jesus took a chance on him. But then Matthew gets this crazy idea. He says to himself, you know, I got a bunch of friends. I like them a lot. They're tax collectors and sinners, and they haven't been to church for a long time. But I think they'd like Jesus. And Jesus just has a way with people, just like the way he cares about me and we've connected. I think he'd care about my friends. So what if I were to throw a party? I got this great house from all my sinful tax collecting. I could buy all the food and drink and party supplies and stuff. I got money, and I could have Jesus come to it, and I could have all my sinner friends and my tax collector friends come to it too, and then they could all hang out together. If I could just get them together with him, he'd take it from there. Instead of using my stuff for me, I could use my stuff to help them meet him. And he runs it past the other disciples. Hey, guys, hey, Peter, James, John, I got this idea. And they say, yeah, I don't think that's a good idea at all. You know, we're getting enough grief over taking you into our little group. Now you're going to get Jesus going to parties with these guys? Might as well ask Jesus just to move into the Playboy mansion and be done with it. But he can't get the idea out of his head. And apparently he kind of screws up his courage at one point and says, hey, Jesus, I know it sounds crazy, but I got this idea. And Jesus says, I've just been waiting for that. Yeah, I'd love that. I'd love to be with your friends. I'd love to meet them and hang out. And Matthew just beams. And he starts sending out Evites, and he posts it on Facebook, and he instant messages everybody. And you got to understand, you have to understand, the people on this guest list have not been invited to a dinner with a rabbi their whole life long. They're not on that list. The text goes on to say, while Jesus was having dinner at Matthew's house, many tax collectors and sinners came and ate with him and his disciples. Wouldn't you love to know what they were talking about? Just because of my job, because I'm a clergy person, I'll know at least of one phrase that got used a number of times, because I'll experience this when I talk with folks, friends outside the church. I was at a lunch not long ago, and one of the guys who was there had recently come to our church and clearly had not been inside a church for a long time, and I could tell because he said to me, hey, I was there last weekend. That was a hell of a sermon. And then he said, whoops, sorry, Father. And it's like, you know, that's okay. That line, whoops, sorry, parson, whatever. Like, I've heard that so many times. It's okay. It's all right. And that phrase, whoops, sorry, Rabbi, over and over again. They're having this dinner talking about how many people they've ripped off and how much money they've taken in and saying bad words and whoops, sorry, Rabbi. And Jesus is just, he's just loving it. He's just loving them. Because you never know who's one ask away, you know, who somebody is in their heart as God sees them is so different than the way we divide them up into us and them. And there's so many people who look like them who are so much hungrier for God and so much captivated by love than a lot of people that look like us. But we're always surprised by this. Religious people always are. And the disciples are watching this with their jaws on the table. Are you kidding me? What kind of rabbi is this? I will tell you, he's the rabbi that believes that people matter to God. Which people? All people. How much? Worth a cross. No us and them. Now, I have to tell you this story, this part of the story, and this may ding you a bit, and it will me sometimes too. And it's really important for churches. There's some other people that are watching this party. In that culture, banquets were open air. Still to this day, if you go to the Middle East, if you go to Israel, there'll be a lot of homes that have kind of open air courtyards. And back then, a party like that would draw spectators, just naturally would. It was a very public world. And this group watching this party going on, they thought of themselves as God's in-group. They're the ones that are connected to God, they knew. And they couldn't figure out what's going on. And so we're told in the text, when the Pharisees saw this, they asked his disciples, why does your teacher eat with tax collectors and sinners? On hearing this, Jesus said, it's not the healthy who need the doctor, but the sick. But go and learn what this means. I desire mercy, not sacrifice. That's a text from the Old Testament. And Jesus says, for I have come not to call the righteous, but sinners. And I love this part of the story, if you're paying close attention when you read it. Matthew tells us the Pharisees ask the disciples this question. They don't ask the rabbi. They don't ask Jesus. They ask the disciples, why does he do this? But Jesus overhears them asking that. And it's like Jesus is saying, I know the answer to this one. I got it. It's a great question. And the disciples are still kind of in Kingdom 101, and they might mess it up. So let me tell you why I do this. Let me tell you why I came, because it's not why you think I came. It's because God doesn't divide the human race up into us and them. My Father wants everybody to be us. My Father loves everybody more than you can possibly imagine. My Father aches after people that are far away from him. So I didn't come for people who are already connected to God. I didn't come for people who think they're already connected to God, because I'm not going to be able to help them much. I'm here for people who have gotten disconnected from God. And this teaching of Jesus comes over and over and over. There's a similar conversation another time. This is recorded in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 15. Now the tax collectors and sinners, notice that phrase again, were all gathered around to hear Jesus. Jesus like a magnet for these people. But the Pharisees and the teachers of the law muttered, this man welcomes sinners and eats with them. This man welcomes sinners. Who's welcome? Everybody's welcome. See, when the Pharisees got together for a party, guess who they invited? Other Pharisees. They studied with Pharisees. They went to church with Pharisees. They met together week after week, year after year. decade after decade. And they never welcomed any outsiders in. They didn't want them. And they thought God was happy about that. They thought the fact that they excluded those sinners and judged those sinners was something that made them closer to God. And they had no idea that it was impairing their ability to love and driving them farther from God. And Jesus is putting them on tilt. And he knows that he is. And he loves them too. So he's always trying to explain to them what's going on and what God's heart is like and how it is that religion, spirituality, when it's wrongly understood or pursued, is a result of great, causes great human misery and rebellion against God. So Jesus tells them three stories. He says, here's what's going on. It's kind of like a guy that had 100 sheep, and one of those sheep gets lost. And what does he do? He leaves the 99, and he goes out, and he does like a full court press, because he'll do anything to find that one lost sheep. It's kind of like a woman that has 10 coins. In that culture, sometimes there'd be a dowry, and maybe that's what he's talking about. But he kind of shifts. First category, kind of a male, kind of a shepherd thing, but this is a real universal deal. So he uses a woman second time around. There's a woman, and she loses one coin, and she goes crazy. She turns the house upside down. It's like her obsession, so she finds that one lost, valued object. Or he says it's like a father, and he's got two sons, and one of them runs away. And it's like his whole heart, it's like his whole life is wrapped up in the moment that that lost boy will come home. And you all understand, it's not that the other sheep or the other coins or the other son doesn't matter. It's that when you've lost something you love, you can't quit searching just because you got some stuff that isn't lost. You ever lose a kid if you're a parent? We have three kids, and one time when they were very small, I took them to a place some of you will know, Chuck E. Cheese, which should be restricted to sinners and tax collectors because it's not an easy place to be in. And one moment I looked up, and Laura was there, and Johnny was there, but Mallory was gone. Of course it would be Mallory, and she was like 3 years old, and I went crazy. I dove through. They have some kind of bin with hundreds of little plastic balls that I dove all the way through and under the balls. I checked under the tables. I went into the women's bathroom. People were yelling at me. I didn't care. I had to find that kid. Now, we still had two kids that weren't lost, so what's the big deal? Imagine I had called Nancy and said, I'm coming home from Chuck E. Cheese. The good news is two of our kids are still found. I understand one of them is lost, and that's suboptimal, but let's focus on the found ones. Let's celebrate the found ones. You lose a kid, one thing matters. Find that kid. I don't even know where the other two were now. I just had to find the lost one. In fact, the other kids got put on the search team. Johnny, you go that way to look for your sister. I understand you're only 1 year old. You're going to really go with that excuse at this point? You're on the search team. See, there's really only two teams. There's the searchers and the searchees. And the Pharisees had this idea that there's actually a third team. We're the spectators. We're the watchers. We're the critics. There's not. There's only two. There's people who are not connected for God, and there's people who love God so much that they will do anything to help other people get connected with God. This man's welcome sinners. Why would he do that? Because he couldn't not. Because people matter to God. Which people? All people. You've never seen a person that doesn't matter more to God than you can imagine. Religious people and irreligious people. You know, a lot of time, who we think of as sinners and who we think of as the godly look a lot different to us than they do to God. And we see this over and over all through the scripture, and especially with Jesus. And so Jesus welcomes people that, you know, no other rabbi would welcome. Roman centurions and adulterous women and lepers and prostitutes and Gentiles and cheats and the demon-possessed. And when he's dying, he welcomes a thief on the cross. Guys, you understand, we are his church. We are his body on earth. Who is welcome here? Believers and unbelievers and skeptics and mockers and Republicans and Democrats and young people and old people and people in suits and people in jeans and people with wrinkled skin, and people with tattooed skin, and people with tattooed wrinkly skin, ooh, people with every color skin, people of every language, respectable people, shady people, addicted people, messed up people, gay people, straight people, transgendered people, skeptical people, Buddhist, Muslim, Hindu, Jewish, humanist, I don't know what I am people, married people, divorced people, welcome to Matthew's party. Gang, we have such a great heritage. It's part of why I'm so excited about this weekend, because we're not here on our own. We're here because of God. And then we stand on the shoulders of brothers and sisters that have followed Jesus for 144 years. We get to be a part of that. Primary guy that started our church, you may not know that. It was a man named Henry. He was a medical doctor, lived in San Francisco. He got drafted, this is back in the 1800s, by what was called, no kidding, the Vigilante Committee of San Francisco, to be what was called an honest police judge. That's a direct quote from that committee. They were looking for an honest police judge as opposed to like what other kind. And then he was mayor of San Francisco. And then he moved to Menlo Park and started our church. We actually got started by the mayor of San Francisco. He died in 1884, just about a decade later. And then a couple, Leland and Jane Stanford, came to be a part of this church that you and I are part of now. And they were involved here before starting a college nearby, of which you might have heard. From the beginning, see, we were a little group of people in here concerned about people out there with a vision for what might God want to do out there to bring justice, to bring compassion, to bring education, to bring literacy. For a long, long time in our church, we didn't have many resources at all. Like that idea that God's mostly dependent on human resources, not us. In 1873, we had 13 charter members, and they worked and volunteered and gave and prayed and labored. And by 1919, we had 12 members. That's not, you know, exponential church growth. Doesn't get you on magazines of, you know, covers for the church growth world. But that little group of people wouldn't give up. Not because of the insiders, because they believed that God had given our church a mission outside. And they would make space for people. Our church made space for people of lots of other denominations in a time when that was really quite rare, because there just wasn't other space around Menlo for those folks. And eventually, things began to grow exponentially. And our church got some more people, and then eventually a new building, and then more resources. But they weren't satisfied. And our church got a nickname many, many, many decades ago, Church of the Pioneers. Now, pioneer is a great word. Pioneer is somebody who is not satisfied with the way things are, that's willing to sacrifice and risk for the sake of something better. Pioneer is somebody who's willing to give up what they love for the sake of what they love more. And there is such a thing as spiritual pioneering. And this is in our DNA, guys. The writer of the book of Hebrews says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus. In other words, let's think about him. Let's keep him in our thoughts all the time. The pioneer and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame. He was and is the first pioneer, and we are the church of the pioneers. And a church of pioneers is willing to sacrifice and risk and to give up my preferences, my taste, what I would like, my comfort, not for me, not for us, not so that we can have something better, but for one reason, so that people who didn't know him yesterday can come to know him tomorrow. This is who we are. And this is why we're here. And we have a campus now in Saratoga, and it's being led by Scott Palmblish and the team here, such a great team, such a great, the congregation that's here, the spirits that are here, Saratoga, man, just go. Pray, risk, dare, dream, just go. We have a campus in Mountain View now that's led by Mark Swarner, a great team there. We have a campus in San Jose, and Scotty Scruggs, in addition to his preaching and teaching and leadership, he's leading that team and that campus there. We have a campus in San Mateo led by Eugene Lee. Just fabulous stuff going on there. We have a campus in Menlo Park led by Dave Peterson. Menlo, are you not grateful to God for Dave Peterson? And then we got Frank Vanderswan leading an unbelievable group at 8 o'clock on Sunday mornings over there. Frank's 125 years old and leading with great vigor. That's so cool. We have Abby Odio leading a whole nother group at Cafe. And I'm so grateful for Abby's mind and teaching and what's going on there. We have a staff of just fabulous people. I wish you knew them all. I wish you knew the people in tech and folks in finance and people serving in ways that you will never see. We have one church. We have one elder board of people that just selflessly oversee our flock to keep us healthy. We have one commitment to one Lord Jesus. We have a whole centralized team helping us to do great worship and helping to plan out great ministry to children and to students and the terrific life groups where people can find community and know and be known, and then great outreach through mission locally and around the world. And then we just need a bunch of Matthews. We just need a bunch of greedy, dishonest, self-centered, messed up people, and this is where you come in. And me too. And all that happens is that's us with all of our messed up mess, and we meet Jesus. And the main thing that happens then is not that we go from them to us, but we realize there is no us and them. There's just Jesus and his friends and the people that he wants to be his friends. And we invite our sinful little friends. And Jesus comes and makes it a party. And I just want to say, if you don't have any sinful little friends, if you don't have any people like Matthew had that list, if you don't have anybody on your list, you might just want to check your heart and say, God, do I have a heart for people who don't know you like you want me to? Maybe as we're launching this series, the next step for you is to just do a heart check. And like, if I can't think of people right now, then I know that I talk to maybe at a restaurant where I go, maybe where I get gas, maybe in my neighborhood, maybe in my family, maybe at the next cubicle, maybe somebody that I go to school with. If I don't have those people in my life, God, is there something wrong with my heart? God, could you give me a new heart? Give me a Matthew heart. I'm telling you, for our church, for everybody in our church to have a Matthew heart. I was reminded at Christmas, nothing transforms your experience at church as much as when you bring along a friend that needs to meet Jesus. And that was my experience of what was going on at Christmas Eve services. When you have an unbelieving friend, and you know heaven and hell are on the line, you got somebody, and they've been living one way that is both hell on earth and going to lead them to an eternity apart from God, I'll tell you what, everything is different. Church looks real different, and you're just praying, God, help it not to be weird. God, help my church friends not to act weird. God, help my friend just get to see Jesus. Jesus is still looking for people who need to be connected to God. Jesus is still looking for people who are willing to join the search team. He's still looking for another Matthew, and another Matthew, and another Matthew, and another Matthew. And he knew exactly what he was doing when he stopped by that tax collector's booth. So now, Menlo Church, every campus, I'm asking at the beginning of this series, as we think about why we're here, and particularly, why is it that everybody's welcome? And why is it that that's not just words, not just a slogan? And what does that mean when somebody comes onto our campus, when you see somebody in the parking lot, when you walk past somebody as they're going around, when somebody's got a question, when you're sitting next to somebody and you don't know what their story is? What hangs in the balance with just that one Jesus value? Yep, in my community, everybody's welcome. Will you do that? Will you, when we gather together, as you serve here, but also all through your day, will you go through your day the way that Jesus went through his day? Will I do that too with a big everybody's welcome sign on my face? Who's sitting at a tax collector's booth that I could connect with, that you could connect with? Can I pray for you? Want to get a cup of coffee? Would you like to come to our church? So often, when somebody is in pain or when somebody is in transition, maybe they just moved to the area, or somebody is in need, got a problem at work. Just that, can I help you? Can I pray for you? Like to come to our church? So I'm asking If you're a part of Menlo Church, whatever campus, will you pray and tell God you want to join the search team? Will you pray and ask, God, would you make me a Matthew? Will you serve and help us build a great campus wherever you are? And I promise you this, you will not do it on your own. Jesus is already at work. I think of one man I know, and he would look from the outside like kind of a poster boy for a great Bay Area life, pretty much a scoffer when it comes to God. You know, a lot of education, a lot of success, a lot of resources. And not long ago, the bottom fell out of his life. And he just found a little bit about what hell looks like. He ended up having a two-hour conversation with somebody who's part of our church. And he said to them, you're a Christian, right? Because they'd let him know about that. So, like, you have to listen to me. And he told this story about how his wife told him that he's an alcoholic. And she's leaving him. And he's at the end of his rope and does not know where to turn. And might it be possible that there is a God who could help him? And, you know, I've told you, Dallas Willard used to say, God's address is at the end of my rope.com. Why are we here? One reason. People matter to God. Which people? All people. How much? More than you can possibly imagine. Everybody's welcome.